From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Just a couple of weeks left in the spring legislative session. The one item at the top of lawmakers' agenda is to pass a new state budget. But there's a lot of uncertainty over what the next year might bring. We'll discuss that and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Ben Zielinski, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. And Ben, always good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Sean, for having me.
I've been following these revenue projections. They seem to me to be a little bit all over the place, a little scattershot this year, as far as how much revenue is going to come in, how much is going to be available for lawmakers to spend and to, of course, budget here as we go through the next few weeks. What is the latest? Because we've heard now from the governor's budget office. What numbers are they looking at going forward?
Yeah, we've certainly seen a lot more changes than usual this year to the projections just because of all the uncertainty with the economy and what the state's actually going to get from the federal government in the coming years. But this week, we got a lot more clarity as the governor's Office of Management and Budget, they lowered their revenue projections for fiscal year 2026. So, well, that's bad news. It's certainly lined up more with the General Assembly's Independent Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability's estimate. So what the governor's office is now estimating is that fiscal year 2026 will bring in $54.9 billion in revenue. COGFA, the General Assembly's group, is estimating $54.5 billion. So there's a difference of about $400 to $500 million between these two agencies when you factor in the revenue changes that the governor wants to make in his budget. These projections are actually pretty much right in line with each other. So that's really good news for lawmakers, just as far as they know what number they're looking at. But certainly the downside is the fact that the governor's office has lowered their revenue projections since the governor introduced his budget in February by more than $500 million, which is a very substantial amount. That's a full 1% decrease that the governor's office is now projecting really equates to a very minimal increase in revenue growth between fiscal year 25 that ends here in June and the end of fiscal year 26 next June. So definitely a lot of warning signs on that front for state lawmakers.
Well, Ben, I know that we were looking at the end of a lot of this federal pandemic aid. So that was being discussed already. Everybody knew this might be a little tighter budget year. Why the reason for this $500 million amount lower in just really a few months?
Yeah, it certainly seems that the big reason right now is the economy. We saw in the first quarter of 2025 here, the first decline in GDP in more than 3 years for the country. And when the governor introduced his budget back in February, it was built on projections by the S&P Global Rating Agency that the economy is going to continue to grow, not at a great pace or anything in the coming year, but there was going to continue to be economic growth, which in turn would make sure that sales tax and income tax revenue that comes into the state, which really makes up the heart of our revenue, would continue to grow. The governor's office and COGFA as well have both dialed back their projections for sales tax and income growth by about 1% in some areas, but corporate income tax is now projected to be almost 5 to 6 to 7% lower. It's really just this changing economy where there's so much uncertainty with tariffs. There's a lot of talk that sales tax was really good in this month of April here because people are trying to get ahead of tariffs, which is going to spell a lot of trouble for sales tax revenue in the coming months and next year.
Charlie, we've talked a little bit on the show before here this spring of how hard it is to try to put a budget together in this climate. It always is because you're trying to look a year out at least. Now, though, I think people don't even know what necessarily could be coming down the road next week or next month.
The uncertainty coming out of Washington, the fact that tariffs are on, tariffs are off, what's the impact going to be? The fact that the federal government says, oh, we're not going to give you this money because we don't like the way you treat our ICE agents, that kind of stuff. That sort of kind of random ruminations on the part of the Trump administration makes it really hard to rationally go ahead and plan. So I look at it as what the GOMBI, the governor's office, and what COGFA, the legislative fiscal guru, has put out. That is their best estimate at this point based on what they know But both agencies have warned that going ahead, there's a lot of uncertainty because we don't know what's going to happen in Washington. As a matter of fact, there's concern that several hundred thousand Illinoisans are going to lose their health care coverage under the plan that the House Republicans in Congress are pushing through to cut a lot of social benefit programs in order to be able to afford tax cuts. So I would say this is the most uncertainty that we've ever seen or that I've ever seen. And I've been watching this stuff for, more than 50 years.
So, Ben, is there talk about that right now as far as, hey, we may have to adjust things? And sometimes they do that anyway. Even in good times, bad times, they have to make some adjustments. But is there talk about maybe some big adjustments that could be coming later in the fiscal year?
Yeah, especially though to hear Charlie say that this is some of the most uncertainty he's ever seen. I mean, that I think really spells out how challenging this situation is for lawmakers and that they have no idea what they're getting into. We've heard from everyone from the governor to budget leaders that it is possible that lawmakers are going to need to come back for a special session at some point later this year to address any of these unknown variables, especially coming from the federal government. I talked to Senate Budget Leader LG Sims earlier this week, and he said that, this is everything that is happening at the federal level and these policies being pushed by the Trump administration are certainly making things much more difficult. He made the point that Charlie made that we have no idea what the federal government is going to do. Congress is out there crafting a budget right now at the same time that state lawmakers are trying to do it. And whatever Congress approves could have huge impacts on states and the reimbursements and the revenue that the states get. But we're not going to have any idea what's actually signed into law until at some point in June, more than likely, or later in the summer from Congress's end. So that really puts the state in an impossible position to kind of, in some ways move forward business as usual, but have in the back of their mind that, hey, we really might need to come back at some point this year to make adjustments because the federal government is not providing this money that we have always received from them.
And Charlie, in the past, there were fiscal voodoo economics, I guess, that could have been done, where maybe the revenue estimates are adjusted a little bit higher and they kind of pass a budget based on that. It may not even be real, but, they would play around with the numbers, massage those a little bit. And Pritzker, he has been clear that he wants to see a budget and won't sign a budget. His office has said this, I think, even just in the last week or two. He will not sign a budget that is not balanced. So it's pretty clear. Whatever number they arrive at, that's the number they're going to have to stick to.
Yeah, and I think that the governor has made it clear, and I don't think he's going to backtrack and say, the legislature wants to spend more than we have, so I'm going to go ahead and let them do it. We're not going to have any of the kind of goofy stuff that we had back in the day, for example, where the legislature would pass a program that was going to cost, and this is obviously an example, it was going to cost $100 a year, but they wouldn't start the program until January. So they only had a budget $50, that kind of nonsense. We're not going to see that. But there are, as I said earlier, I've never seen so much uncertainty in terms of what's going to happen from the federal government, not even what is going to happen going forward, but whether or not we're actually going to be able to get money that Congress appropriated for us in this current fiscal year that the Trump administration is freezing and saying, we're not going to give it to Illinois and other states that don't genuflect before ICE.
So I guess there's revenue that comes from the traditional sources. But Ben, is there any talk about trying to raise additional revenue, tax increases, for example?
Yeah, the talk is, I guess, out there, I would say. I don't know how serious any of this talk is as far as it goes for legislators. I think the governor was pretty clear a couple months ago when he was asked about the possibility of a statewide service tax, for example. He said that's not his first option. He really doesn't want to raise taxes. He wants to balance the budget with what we got. The politics of raising taxes is extremely hard. The governor's more than likely going to be up for re-election here next year. And he certainly could be running for an even higher office in a few years from now. So he doesn't want to have to do anything like that. You know, there's certainly a lot of groups out there. There is a progressive group that has pushed for, you know, $6 billion worth of different tax increase options, from, you know, a progressive tax that has already failed in the state to, you know, some other things that would especially target more wealthy people. I don't know that lawmakers are seriously considering anything that's drastic. The governor did propose a very small tax increase of about $100 million worth on some very specific casino items, as part of his mechanisms to reach a balanced budget this year. But then everything else has largely been just some readjustments as far as when the state's going to transfer money, a tax amnesty program that is designed to claw back some missing tax revenue from over the years. So, you know, it's certainly possible, because this situation is so challenging that, you know, at some point lawmakers are probably going to need to look for a more serious revenue solution in the form of in the form of tax increases. But right now, we're not really seeing any major movement on something like that.
And Charlie, you're not expecting some last-minute surprise.
No, not at all.
With Pritzker, too, you know, when you, Charlie, when you think about him running, let's say for president, people don't know him across the country all that well. The one thing he can tout, you know, is that he inherited a pretty bad budget situation. And of course, with a lot of help from the federal government, he was able, though, to turn the fiscal situation into something better than it was. I would guess this is still key for him. He has to be looking and saying to himself, I don't want to be somebody looked at as, you know, I put big tax increases on people. I also don't want us to backslide.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of the things that he's touted is the fact that we've had, what, 9 credit upgrades in his years in office. We've gotten favorable reviews from the credit rating agencies for the discipline that we've shown. And that's his main talking point in terms of how he took over at a time when the state's finances were really in shambles, thanks to Bruce Rauner. And he's kind of put us on a steady keel. And we were helped, sure, we were helped by the federal money coming from the COVID pandemic. But on the other hand, we didn't use that money to start a whole lot of new programs. A lot of that money went into creating a larger rainy day fund and in paying off old bills. So in that sense, when the COVID money stopped flowing, it didn't put us in the same kind of a desperate situation that some other governments found themselves in. So yeah, his fiscal responsibility is probably his number one calling card. And you mentioned that people don't really know J.B. Pritzker, and I think back, it wasn't so long ago that there was some guy, some senator from the South Side, and his name was Bark something or other. Nobody had heard of him either.
Yeah,
So there you go.
I remember sitting on this show when he ran in the primary for the U.S. Senate, and everybody on the show pretty much thought someone else was going to win that primary
Yeah.
race. And of course, he ended up doing it, and the rest is history. But Ben, when we look here at the final couple of weeks, I know there are a lot of lobbyists, a lot of groups out there who are really trying to get some things added into the budget. I'll mention just a couple of those. One of them is a fix for what is known as Tier 2 employees in the state. These are people whose benefits are less than those that came before them. There's been a push to try to bring those benefits up to the Tier 1 folks, the older options that were there. That would be costly. There's also some push out there for more money for higher education, and also the adult immigrant health care program that came in a couple of years ago and turned out to be quite expensive. Governor's talked about rolling that back. So is any of this stuff going to wind up being resolved in the final budget? Does it look that way?
Yeah, I guess resolved in the sense that it may be, you know, kind of unresolved in some ways, that we're not going to see a lot of this as part of the budget. As far as the pension goes, I've been told that, you know, conversations are still happening. I know lawmakers are interested in doing something. They've said previously in the last few weeks publicly that we will have some sort of pension reform bill. To what that extent actually is, I'm not sure. It's going to be the largest thing in the world or something, you know, entirely groundbreaking, especially something as large as what a lot of these union folks or even the governor may have proposed. On the higher education front, you know, the talks are happening about reforming how the money gets distributed to state universities, but that's a going to be very transformative to the state budget. And I'm not so sure that this is the right year to do that. And I think lawmakers are kind of recognizing that, in that, you know, it would be very hard to potentially put something that is a continually increasing cost, certainly could increase costs for higher education in the very first year that this happens. Yeah, you know, all these different things I think are kind of, you know, they're being talked about, they're being vetted, but we're not going to see them. And I think this immigrant healthcare program is a really good example of that. The governor proposed cutting out the healthcare program for immigrant adults who are not covered under other plans for people between ages 42 and 64. That's supposed to save the state more than $300 million, which is a pretty substantial amount. You know, it's kind of, we've seen in some polling that some of this stuff is unpopular as well. So, you know, it certainly seems like right now the governor's full steam ahead going to be able to include that in the budget. The department is already working to wind that program down. And it hasn't, you know, despite some vocal opposition from Latino lawmakers, the Joint Committee on Administrative Review, which could actually block the department from doing this, hasn't taken any action to do so far. So it certainly seems like that's something that is not going to be included at this point in the budget.
There's also the concern, as I mentioned earlier, that if in fact the plan being put forward by the congressional Republicans actually becomes law, then there's going to be several hundred thousand people in Illinois who are going to lose their health care coverage. And that's got to be, what do we do in that case? The options are, well, they won't get preventive care, and so they won't go to a doctor or anything until it's an emergency, and they have to go to the hospital emergency room where it's going to cost more money, or we just let them die, which obviously we can't really do, but that's kind of the option. If you don't provide healthcare coverage, it's not that people are not, oh, well, I don't have coverage, so I'm not going to get sick. It's how do we provide the care when they do get sick? Because we're not going to let them die on the street.
Ben, you mentioned earlier, too, about some of the concern of whether or not immigration enforcement and federal funding could be tied together. This is something that the Attorney General is now going to court over. There is concern about that somehow Illinois could be punished by the Trump administration. Where does that all stand?
So we've heard from some folks in the Trump administration that they want to withhold grants and other federal funding from states that are sanctuary states, essentially like Illinois, that do not participate in federal immigration enforcement. The Attorney General's office, as well as 19 other Democratic Attorney Generals around this state, are arguing that this would be illegal. Congress appropriated funds, and federal agencies don't have any right to withhold funding just because the state of Illinois doesn't want to participate in federal immigration enforcement. And these attorneys general and Attorney General Kwame Raoul have argued that it's the federal government who's responsible for immigration enforcement. If they want to enforce these laws, if they want to deport people, they need to go out and do it themselves, and they shouldn't be forcing the state to do that. That would be unconstitutional because federal law already gives power to the federal government specifically to enforce this. So, the state could be on the hook for more than, $2 billion worth of funding that could be lost if the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Department of Transportation, whose secretaries have both said that they plan to withhold funding from states like Illinois because of this, if they don't appropriate or give out this grant funding, that could, certainly be detrimental to Illinois in a lot of ways. This is FEMA disaster recovery funding after tornadoes. This is funding for road construction from the Department of Transportation. And the attorneys general here are arguing that this is just completely illegal because Congress has already said the states can have access to this money.
Yeah, and Charlie, I don't know if you can recall anything. I don't know, Charlie, can you recall anything like this in the past as far as federal government punishing a state or trying to punish certain states? And I'll be honest, if I was a Trump supporter that lived in Illinois, I'd be a little upset, too, because I'm still paying my taxes. So I expect some return on that investment.
Yeah, and I can't remember anything analogous to this, but my memory only goes back 50 years. And I don't know what would have happened, say, at the turn of the century, the previous century, in the Gilded Age. But From my perspective, and I'm not a constitutional scholar, I'm not a presidential historian scholar, I don't think we've ever had a president as vindictive and as narcissistic as the guy we have now. And he's going to punish the states that won't fall in line with what his ideas are, how you deal with people who've been living here for years but don't have citizenship, those kinds of things that play to his base. As I say, I've never seen anything like it. And there's a certain irony in a sense, because we were talking about Kwame Raoul joining other attorneys general across the country in suing to block a lot of the stuff that the Trump administration is trying to do. One of the things that is a result of Raoul's activism is he's asking the state legislature to increase funding for his office by $15 million this year, so they can hire more attorneys to protect Illinois from what the Trump administration is trying to do to us.
I did want to save a couple of minutes here to talk about what's going on at the Capitol over the last few days. And Ben, you wrote about this. It involves a state representative, been there almost 20 years, Fred Crespo. What's going on there?
Fred Crespo, he's a Democrat state representative from the northwest suburbs up in Cook County. And he has been the chair of the House Appropriations General Services Committee. And I guess on the side, he's been working on some of a bit of a budget project, trying to find some ways that the state could save money in a budget, you know, in this year that's very tight. Representative Crespo has been kind of a more fiscally conservative guy. He's been really, you know, harping on his fellow Democrats that they have got to rein in spending. They can't just be going to taxpayers to increase, you know, state spending so often, especially in this climate. So he's been trying to look for ways to, you know, rein some of that in and propose some solutions that don't involve cutting programs and, but also don't involve massive spending increases. But according to House Speaker Chris Welch, he wasn't communicating about that to House leadership. And the Speaker has taken this very drastic action to remove Representative Crespo from all Democrat caucus meetings. He's taken away his staff. He's removed him as chair of this committee, as well as chair of the Legislative Audit Commission. It's really, you know, in many ways an unprecedented step here that the Speaker has taken to punish a lawmaker who is, you know, basically doing this side work, which every member has the right to do. And the Speaker has said that every member, you know, can work on their own bills. But the issue here, according to the Speaker, is that Representative Crespo was just not communicating these initiatives with House leadership. And it really seemed to, I guess, you know, bug the Speaker and other members of leadership. And it's resulted in Representative Crespo just being basically completely demoted out of conversations for the foreseeable future, at least.
It seems pretty heavy-handed to me. What has Crespo said about this?
Yeah, I haven't talked to him specifically yet, but it looks like he's been talking to other reporters about this. And he's saying, you know, essentially he's explained what he's done, which I mentioned there. And I think he just feels that this is really heavy-handed punishment for something that he's doing as an independently elected lawmaker who represents the exact same number of people in a district that Chris Welch does as well. You know, he's chair of this committee. I guess, you know, there's some talk that he missed a meeting and that, you know, rubbed leadership the wrong way as well. So I think he's a little bit just dumbfounded that this happened over this specific instance, that it wasn't something larger, you know, because 2 years ago we saw the Speaker Welch kick Mary Flowers out of caucus because of her, the way she was treating staff members. She was allegedly very disrespectful of staff members, compared one staffer's appearance to Hitler. These are far different situations. I think that's, you know, why Representative Crespo is just a little bit confused that this is his punishment for this.
Yeah, Charlie, just a few seconds here, but I know Welch has always said, you know, we're going to operate differently than Madigan did. Well, I guess he is. I don't remember Madigan going this far with people.
Yeah, and I don't remember him actually kicking anybody out of the caucus. But on the other hand, I do know that there were instances in which he would run somebody in a primary against someone that he felt he wanted to get out of the caucus. But in terms of switching people from committee assignments, that was always kind of routine. And usually it was done on the basis that there's this bill that is in this committee, and it's really important for us to get it out. And I know, Wheeler, that you can't vote for because of your district, so I'm going to put Zelensky in instead of you, because he can vote for it with no problem in his district. That kind of stuff goes on all the time. I assume it still does. But I don't recall, and again, my memory's not all that good anymore, I don't recall Madigan ever excommunicating somebody to this extent.
Let's go now to our notes from the field, and Ben, we'll start with you this week.
Yeah, this week the House sent their first bill to the governor's desk this spring, and it was a bill responding to the Sonya Massey shooting. And this legislation that was pushed in the Senate by Springfield Senator Doris Turner and pushed in the House by Representative Cam Buckner of Chicago, this would require police agencies to do what is really a lot more due diligence on their hiring. It would require police agencies to do a much more thorough background check into an officer's past investigations at previous departments where they were employed, any complaints against them, the results of those investigations, a more thorough look at the criminal history of an officer. You know, we at Capital News Illinois, we did an investigation last year that found Sean Grayson had a whole lot of problems when he was in Logan County. He was under investigations at that department for his actions that ultimately just went away when he was hired by Sangamon County. You know, lawmakers are hoping that this will help close some loopholes and, you know, ensure that departments are hiring better police officers.
All right. And Charlie.
Well, as some of you may know, I've been a White Sox fan since forever, going back to the 50s. And so I was very excited when the baseball commissioner, Rob Manfred, earlier this week reinstated Pete Rose and White Sox player Shoeless Joe Jackson, making them eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, everybody knows who Pete Rose was. Shoeless Joe may not be that familiar, but he was really probably the best ball player the White Sox ever had. He had a lifetime average, 356. I believe it was like the fourth highest average ever. But he was implicated in the Black Sox scandal, in which a number of the 1919 White Sox were charged with basically throwing the World Series to the Cincinnati Reds in that year. They were acquitted by a jury, but then Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis barred them forever from playing baseball. And so now Shoeless Joe has had that lifted, and it's conceivable that he will make the Hall of Fame. And getting to modern times, the White Sox are now 6.5 games ahead of the Colorado Rockies from being the worst team in baseball this year. And as a matter of fact, if the Rockies continue at their current clip, they will wind up losing 136, which would give them the record for the most number of losses in Major League history, which the Sox set last year when they lost 121.
Yeah, good to see improvement, Charlie. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Ben Zelensky. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.